Aw Yeah Comics celebrates and promotes everything that is wonderful about comics, toys, artwork, and the joy they bring to people. Visit them in person at one of their three locations, Harrison, New York, aka my local comic shop, Skokie, Illinois, or Muncie, Indiana. If you have kids and have been looking for a family-friendly store, look no further. Join Aw Yeah for exciting events, including creator signings, how-tos, and more. Visit awyeahcomics.com and follow Aw Yeah on social media for more. Their name says exactly how they feel about it. Say it with me now. Aw Yeah. Fat Moose Comics is New Jersey's best and oldest comic book store. Established in 1982 and under new ownership since 2020, Moose sells a wide selection of comics from every publisher and time period, along with action figures, graphic novels, posters, statues, and more. If you're looking for something and they don't have it, they can probably get it for you. They know a guy. Visit Fat Moose in Whippany the next time you're in the Garden State, and be sure to reach out via the Fat Moose Comics Facebook page. In the 1950s, George Reeves embodied the Man of Steel in Superman's first television adaptation. From its gritty black-and-white beginnings to the kid-friendly color years, to this day, an entire generation reveres George as their Superman, while for others, the show remains an overlooked chapter in the character's mythology. On this podcast, we bring everyone together as we break down each episode of Adventures of Superman. Welcome to another exciting episode in the Adventures of Superman. I'm your host, Anthony Desiato. Joining me to discuss Season 2, Episode 3, The Man Who Could Read Minds, is Superman Homepage Editor-in-Chief Steve Eunice. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Anthony. Great to be here.
Thank you so much. All the way from Australia, we had you on my other Superman podcast, Digging for Kryptonite, a while back, and it was wonderful to finally connect with you after all of those years of visiting your website. And we talked about your Superman fan journey generally. One of the things I was so struck by was I asked you about gaps in your fandom, things that you haven't read or watched or listened to, and you had very few. Your Superman fandom has been very thorough, not surprisingly. And one of the things that we at least touched on was the George Reeves series that we're here to talk about now. So let me toss it to you, just kind of big picture. What has your experience been with Adventures of Superman? How and when did you come to it, and just kind of overall experience with it?
Yeah, well, when I really got into Superman and, you know, started reading the comic books, and obviously I'd seen the Christopher Reeve films and the Super Friends cartoons were very much a part of my childhood growing up. I had caught one or two episodes of the George Reeves series, mainly because of the fact that my father was a big fan of the series and loved it growing up himself. And so when the DVDs came out and they were readily available to watch, I would take them over to watch them with my dad, not all of them because there were 104, as you know, but some of the early ones that he remembered. And it was great reliving those with him because he hadn't seen them for many years. And it was just great being able to go through all 104 episodes and watching them and reliving them. And, you know, I'd become friends with Noel Neal and, so I'd be able to see all her episodes and be part of that and, you know, get to talk to her about when I would catch up with her in Metropolis, Illinois for the Superman celebration was just phenomenal.
That's amazing. I love that you had that opportunity to have that personal connection. I guess, is there anything that you can share about those encounters that you had? Anything that just really stood out to you about those interactions, about whatever she was able to share about her time on the show? Is there anything that sticks out?
Just how lovely she was. She was just such an approachable, warm-hearted person who you just felt, you know, talking with her was like a warm hug. She was just a wonderful person and so endearing. I even got to spend an evening with Jack Larson when he was here in Sydney, Australia, filming his scenes for Superman Returns. We went to a Chinese restaurant and had dinner together. And it was so funny because I was just sitting opposite him. And it's just like he was an old guy. And I was like, you know, it was kind of a little bit awkward at first. But then he would just smile or laugh or something. He'd just see Jimmy Olsen from the 50s TV series. And it was just so kind of surreal to be sitting there opposite Jimmy Olsen, even though he was an elderly gentleman at the time. He had some wonderful stories, and he would just talk in depth about the people he'd met and the things that he'd seen and the people that he'd worked with. And Noel was similar. She was just, you know, forthcoming with so many great stories about her time and look back at that time with such reverence and such fond memories.
Oh, that's awesome. I can imagine how surreal that must be. one of the other big picture things I wanted to ask you is, we know that this television series had quite an arc from the very gritty, noirish first season to the very kid-friendly color years to come, and then where we are right now, which feels like sort of this bridge between those two distinct versions of the show. And I guess I'm just curious for you, when you kind of look at the flow of Adventures of Superman, which era or iteration of Adventures of Superman do you gravitate towards the most? What resonates most with you?
I definitely think season one had a more adult appeal, and there is something about those first season episodes that, you know, really, you know, still even stand the test of time, even though obviously they're so old now for and many viewers. They'll look back and think that they're pretty amateurish as far as their special effects and everything concerned. But the stories were a lot more adult. And then obviously as season two onwards, they lightened the show's stories that became a little bit more comedic. You know, obviously the change from, you know, of Noel Neill coming in, replacing Phyllis Coates, there was a difference between them. And obviously Noel had been there before for the serials with Kirk Allen, but she was just a bit more of a lighthearted approach to Lois, and her and Jimmy's camaraderie was a lot more like a brother-sister kind of team, where Phyllis Coates' Lois Lane was more hard-nosed and a serious reporter. And so both were great in the roles, but you could just see the distinction between the way the stories were told and the lighthearted feel of episodes, seasons two onwards.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of that dynamic between Lois and Jimmy, that's on full display in this episode that we're here to talk about now. So once again, The Man Who Could Read Minds, October 3rd, 1953, written by Roy Hamilton, directed by Tommy Carr. I will give my synopsis of the episode, and then we'll break it down as we always do. So in this episode, the Daily Planet crew joins Inspector Henderson on a stakeout to catch the so-called phantom burglar who has been targeting wealthy neighborhoods and has eluded police. Jimmy and Lois take matters into their own hands and follow a lead to a Metropolis nightclub. They ultimately deduce a plot that involves a phony swami and fortune teller and their accomplice Monk, who are taking wax impressions of patrons' keys and making copies. With Jimmy posing as the wealthy Argentinian playboy Don Alvarez, they try to lure the criminal trio into a trap, but they need a super rescue in the end. And our guest cast here, we have Larry Dobkin as the quote-unquote swami, Viola Vaughn as Laura, Richard Carlin as Monk, and Tom Bernard as Doug, a rare extra employee at the Daily Planet, something that we did not see much of in this series. So,
true.
Overall impressions, and actually even before that, I had asked you about coming on to do this, and I think this was the episode that you particularly gravitated towards. So I was just kind of curious what made this one stand out and just what your overall impressions were.
Well, because of Jack Larson and Noel Neill's camaraderie, as you spoke about, this is definitely an episode for them. It's, you know, Clark and Superman have very little to do in this episode. Obviously, there's the heroics at the end, as you mentioned. They need the save. But yeah, this just highlighted the great dynamic between Lois and Jimmy in this series. And it's an early one for Noel in her run as Lois. So yeah, it was just a fun episode between them. And I loved Jack Larson's take on the Argentinian character that he had to play. And that was just kind of fun.
I have to say, in terms of my overall feelings about this one, it was genuinely funny. I had forgotten how funny this one is, especially when Jimmy is in his guise at the nightclub, and we'll talk about it. But when he has to pretend to be this person and is put on the spot and is made to dance the tango, it was genuinely funny. So I think it was a great episode for Jimmy. Yeah, unfortunately, Clark didn't have much to do in this one. Like you said, we have the Superman heroics. There's a car chase early on where Superman appears. And then, of course, in the finale, not a ton for Clark, but definitely a great one for Jimmy. And Jimmy and Lois, although one of the things that I wrestled with a little bit here is this version of Lois. I think you see the softening of the character here in a number of key instances. And I promise for the audience, I'm not going to harp on this as we continue to make our way through the episodes. I know we're into a new phase of the show and we have a new Lois, and that's fine. It's still taking me a little while though, because I was so so enamored with Phyllis Coates as Lois and that tough as nails gritty version. And there are a couple of instances here where it just feels like, oh, this is the shift. And so it's taken me a minute to kind of reacclimate to to this version. And so that was one of the other things that stood out to me. But definitely fun and definitely a great showcase for Jimmy and for Jack Larson.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, shall we go to our scene-by-scene discussion of this?
Let's do it.
All right. So we open here, our opening sequence. It's nighttime, and we have the Daily Planet crew joining Inspector Henderson on the stakeout to catch this phantom burglar. And right from the jump, a lot of tension between Henderson and Perry White. The Planet's been running these articles, essentially questioning, what are the police doing? Why haven't the police been able to catch this guy? And so Henderson has invited them out, essentially, to show, look, this is what we're doing. And there's a great exchange where Henderson says something to the effect of, like, we have no leads, there's no witnesses, there's nothing. And Perry's like, yeah, I know, that doesn't look great for you. I don't know, what was your take on just that opening sequence there, that tension between them, the fact that the Daily Planet crew, like, they're out in all four of them, they're all out in full force for this?
It's kind of funny because you look back at just how much the media has changed in our time, you know. There are some similarities to modern day where the media, yeah, will have a go at the police and be critical of them not solving mysteries or not solving crimes or what have you. But the fact the police invite them in to help out is just like, what? When does that ever happen? So it shows how journalism has changed over the years. And, you know, to see, and I don't know if that was necessarily a thing that was happening at the time or if it's just the way the story was written. But journalists obviously had a more prominent and were, you know, more revered than they are now. It was interesting to see that dynamic. And Perry was not pulling any punches when he was having a go at Inspector Henderson about them not solving this crime. And it was kind of funny to see how frustrated Inspector Henderson was. And it was almost like him saying, well, we've got no idea. Look how bad it is. You have a look for yourselves, kind of thing. You know, you think you're any better?
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting with Perry. To your point, yes, I think you definitely see just the prominence of a newspaper like that, particularly at that time and the position, the stature that a Perry White would occupy in the city. And the other thing, and I know I'm a broken record, I say this all the time, but there was just that one throwaway line in a voiceover in the Crime Wave episode in the first season, but referencing Perry White being the former mayor of Metropolis. And I so latched on to that. And I always have that in the back of my head too, where it's like, this guy used to run the city. So of course he would really be in the thick of it like this. So I kind of always think about that. I love too how, again, Perry's so gruff and barking orders at everyone and often can be dismissive of a lot of people. I'm jumping ahead for a minute, but at the end of the car chase, when Perry and Superman are there together, I like that dynamic because it's such a rare instance where you see Perry actually be a little deferential to someone, right? There's that lead with the top and Perry doesn't seem to think much of it, but Superman's like, well, we might as well look into it anyway. And Perry's like, oh yeah, you're right. It's just a little thing, but it's one of those rare instances where it's like, oh, okay, there's actually someone he kind of shows a little bit of deference to. So I enjoy that.
Yeah, he definitely looks up to Superman.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is, and I look, we have to have an episode here, I get it, but Clark is just standing there and I'm thinking to myself, this might be a good time. We're trying to catch this phantom burglar. No one can see. If only someone had enhanced sight. It's like, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he was, you know, very discreetly scanning around and we just didn't see.
Maybe. Yeah. But they definitely got Clark out of the way pretty early to make sure that he wasn't the one solving the crime.
Yeah. So it's early on where Lois and Jimmy peel off. And this is one of those examples that I was talking about before where Jimmy is the one who suggests to Lois, we should go off. We should try to find this guy and get the story for ourselves. And I liked it for Jimmy, but it's just one of those moments that just kind of felt off to me because in my mind, in my heart, it's Lois who should be the one to say, let's go get the story. So again, that was one of those moments where I'm like, oh, okay, this is different vibe here.
Yeah, definitely season one, Lois would have been the one to have suggested the idea, but I kind of like that it's Jimmy who does it because it's an irresponsible thing to do. It's more like a childish thing. Come on, what if we solve the crime? It's not, why don't we get the story? It's, why don't we solve the crime, which is a difference there. Lois would have said, let's go get this story. But Jimmy is like, no, let's solve the crime and that will be the story. So it's kind of like a young kid looking for adventure.
No, that is a good point. And following along that thread, not too long after that, they do come upon this this masked bandit who's leaving one of the houses. And
what are the chances?
What are the chances? And Jimmy goes for it. And they have quite the tussle on the lawn.
He tackles him. Yeah, it's like a rugby tackle. It's just pretty impressive for Jimmy. He's not usually that much of a go-getter and getting into the thick of things.
Yeah, I was surprised at how much tussling there was. There was a lot of back and forth on that lawn there. I was like, all right. And then we launch into a car chase. So it was a very dynamic opening, I felt, to this episode here. There's one moment where Perry and Clark are in the car and they see that Lois and Jimmy are engaged in this car chase. I don't know if I just missed this or misunderstood or didn't hear it right. What is it that Clark says to Perry? Does he say that he wants to go follow Lois and Jimmy, or he wants to go file the story in the office? What is it that he says to get out of the car?
Yeah, I think he's saying he wants to file the story or something along those lines. It wasn't exactly clear to me either. It was like he needed to extricate himself from being part of the chase, but it wasn't clear what exactly he was doing. And it's kind of passed over as well, because the next time we do see Clark, he is back at the Daily Planet. So I think it was more like he needed to go file the story, because he definitely wasn't going after the chase from what we gathered from what he was saying.
I know. I think initially maybe I just misheard and I thought he said follow, but file actually probably makes more sense, because even later when the crew is with Superman, Perry makes a remark about Clark being back in the office. So maybe that was what he said to get out of the car. But then you get that crack from Perry where he's like, don't worry, Ken, like the bullets won't get you up here in the car. You know, another one of those moments of a character putting Clark down for being cowardly, which I never feel quite lines up, because as I say over and over, anytime any one of these people is in trouble, they always ask for Clark. So which one is it?
Yeah, it's almost, you know, they're pulling those lines from the comic books. You know, that's the Clark from the comic books of the era who was very mild-mannered, and where this Clark Kent in the series is definitely not. I mean, he's mild-mannered in that he's polite, but he's definitely no shrinking violet. So he's always out there in the thick of the action. If anything, it's more Clark Kent show than Superman show, because Superman just comes in the end and does a lot of the heroics, but it's usually Clark Kent doing all the investigative reporting.
Indeed, which is something that I do very much love about the show. Oh, this is an episode where we do get a bit of a rare early in the episode Superman appearance, where we get that change into Superman and Lois and Jimmy, the tire was blown out and they're about to go over a cliff and he catches it. And I thought they did this well for what they were able to realize on screen with the budget and technology and all of that. It was cool just to kind of see the chase in general, and then to see Superman grab the car and pull it back. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it was definitely a great way to indicate of the save without actually seeing him, you know, in a wide shot, you know, pulling the car back. It was all done really well with close shots of Jimmy and Lois in the car, and then Superman at the back of the car. And, you know, so it was really well done for its time. And as you say, an early save.
And then we get some critical information here that in that tussle, Jimmy was able to pick up a top from the Phantom Burglar, which...
Did you know what they meant straight away when they said a top?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, why?
Well, maybe it's a difference in languages. I mean, we all speak in English here, but, you know, I wasn't sure what they meant by a top from just the language until we actually saw what it was and made reference to, you know, the club and everything like that. I was like, oh, okay.
Gotcha.
You know, maybe spinning top, or, you know, I don't, that's where I came off. That's what I was thinking, but yeah, interesting.
I was going to ask if you guys have a different term for that piece or no, you just call it a spinning top.
Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I remember playing with those as a kid. But what I like about this is Superman is the one who makes the connection to the Tip Top Club in Metropolis.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things I always, one of my favorite things about this show is just when there are, especially in the first season, references to these friends that Clark has that like we've never seen before and often we never see again. He's got all these best friends all over the city and the world sometimes. And then an instance like this where he's, you know, Tip Top Club is top of mind. And it's like the private life of Clark Kent. It's like, what is this guy doing when he's not at the planet? That's, I want to see that.
Yeah, he's got more than one double life. He's got another double life somewhere else. But yeah, whether it's news sources, information sources that he's gathering from news stories or whatever. But yeah, he does seem to know a lot of people in some interesting places.
Yeah, I love it. I feel like this guy is living his life. We only see certain aspects of it, but I feel like he's living his. I'm not saying he's a club rat out there all the time, but I just like the idea that he's dialed in to the Metropolis nightlife. So I thought that was cool. Mm. And speaking of which, then we have Lois and Clark going to the Tip Top Club to see if there's any connection between the club and this phantom burglar. And that's where we see this Swami act where, he's seemingly, without seeing, able to guess what item his assistant is holding up. She's gathering items from, from people inside. And, of course, Clark very quickly uses his X-ray vision and determines that this is a system where the assistant has a microphone in her flower and then the quote-unquote Swami has the earpiece. And he's hearing everything that she's saying when she names the item that or whispers the item to the person as she takes it from them. So they haven't yet made the connection as to how this factors into or even that it factors into the phantom burglar. But at least we get that piece of the puzzle with that.
Which was really interesting because straight away I was thinking to myself, wow, did they have this kind of technology back in the day with these little earpieces and little microphones? And here I am thinking Bluetooth, but it's probably like just shortwave radio. And really interesting that that kind of technology was referenced in this episode. And, Clark deciphering that was the way that they were pulling off this these shenanigans and making the audience think that the Swami was a mind reader and was able to use some supernatural ability to guess what people were holding up where he was blindfolded and couldn't see them. So, I was kind of interested that Clark just kind of passed that off and was like, okay, that's just the gimmick that they're going with and didn't think anything more of it from a sinister perspective. But I guess that's the story that's being told.
Yeah, it ultimately ends up being Lois in particular who puts the next piece together and then Lois and Jimmy who follow that thread. But yeah, Clark is quick to just write it off, I guess, as that gimmick, as part of the act at the club and not thinking anything more of that. And I like, too, he's so quick to lay out to Lois how they're doing this. And, of course, she naturally asks, how would you know that? And plays it off as, well, what else could it be?
Yeah.
I had the same thought you did, though, about the technology. I mean, Clark is so matter of fact about it, where he equates it to a walkie-talkie setup, essentially, which... Yeah. Sure, but yeah, it definitely felt advanced for the time.
Well, I guess we've seen some more advanced technology in the series beyond just little earpieces and microphones. You know, we've got some pretty cluey inventive scientists in some episodes that create robots and other machines that read minds and all that kind of thing. So here was just a little gimmick that's being used.
No, very true. I even remember in the first season when it was the Evil 3 episode and Perry had a phone in the car. And I remember watching the episode and I looked up when was the first car phone invented because it just felt like, wow, like I was surprised to see that.
There you go.
So although Clark and Lois leave, we get to spend a little bit more time with this criminal trio here. And we get more insight into how this plot actually works when the assistant is grabbing a key in particular from people. She has wax in her handkerchief and uses that to make an impression of the key and then passes that off to Monk, who has retrieved registration information from the patrons' cars to learn where they live and then is making a copy of the key from that mold in the car. And that's how they're using it to break into all of these houses. So we get some critical information at this juncture.
And it's a pretty nifty idea. They're working well with each other. They've got a good thing going, and it seems to be working well for them. And they don't really have to even break and enter, which is why there's no, you know, fingerprints or clues for the police to be able to trace how they're doing this, because it's as clean as somebody just entering their own house.
Yeah, it is pretty clever. It was cool to see how all of those pieces fit together there. That brings us then to the Daily Planet the next day. And of course, another house has been hit and Perry is irate as ever and essentially orders Lois and Jimmy to back off. And Lois seemingly acquiesces, like, faster than you would typically expect her to. Of course, she hasn't dropped it. And in the next scene, they'll keep it going. But again, and I don't mean to harp on this, but even in that scene with Perry, even knowing that she's still going to continue on, it just felt like a more, that softer, more deferential Lois, right?
Yeah, she didn't argue with Perry, where in the past she may have argued with him and tried to stand her ground. But here she's a little bit more devious in that she's just, yes, sure, Perry, no worries, Perry, we'll leave it behind, Perry. But knowing that, and she's dragging Jimmy out, and he just can't believe that she's bending over so quickly to say, yes, Perry, that's fine, because she has a plan that, no, they're not going to leave it alone. They're going to do their own thing regardless of what Perry says. But it is a little bit of a shift on how Lois might have reacted in the past.
I'm forgetting now in the moment, what was Perry's reasoning for telling them to let it go? Was it just that it was too dangerous?
Yeah, okay. It was too dangerous. Let the police do their thing. And, you know, so that was pretty much it. And I don't think he ever really looks at Jimmy and Lois as his top notch. It's always he's giving them to Clark, because it's, you know, obviously a sign of its time. It's too dangerous for a woman to cover these types of stories. And so, and Jimmy's still this young buck who he's, you know, always telling him, remind me again why I even hire you and why I keep you around, that kind of thing. So I think it's more of the, yeah, it's not for you guys. Leave it alone.
True. And again, sign of the times, even just the fact that earlier on, Clark had to escort Lois to the club, right? And yeah. Perry was specific about her not going by herself. But then we follow Lois and Jimmy into her office. And like we've said, she's not dropping this. And she now has made the connection that victims of the Phantom Burglar had previously attended the Tip Top Club. So there's some sort of connection there that they need.
There's a pattern.
Yes. Now, it's Jimmy in the scene who suggests, well, why don't we just go to the police with this, which I feel like as it would be a natural next step, but we still have to continue on with our episode. And in fairness to Lois, I think her point is valid, where they still don't know exactly how all of these pieces fit together. They need to discover more. They need to investigate more.
And that's what Jimmy started on this whole thing with. He was like, we need to find the clues. We need to break this story. And so Lois is just following his lead that he started with. She's like, no, we haven't done what we set out to do, while we started on this path in the first place. So let's go that little bit further.
And then Lois asks Jimmy, how's your Spanish?
Oh, wow. Poor Jimmy. I mean, he tries his best.
He does. So clearly Lois has had this idea to sort of transform Jimmy into this mark that would be so attractive to these criminals at the Tip Top Club. And she asks him how his Spanish is. We get a little bit from him, mostly food related, as he says he's been eating out at Spanish restaurants. And then she starts using her makeup to draw mustache and sideburns on him. I'm a proud backer of the Paragons of Earth comic book project, now available to support on Kickstarter. The creative team of Percival Constantine, Thomas DJ, and Eric Johns have plucked forgotten Golden Age superheroes from the public domain, reinvented them as their own sort of Justice League, and put them up against a Lovecraftian apocalypse. Back this project and learn more by going to percivalconstantine.com/paragons. Also, Perry, a multiple-time guest on Digging for Kryptonite, hosts the Superhero Cinephiles podcast about comic book inspired films. Be sure to listen wherever you get podcasts. We reference the television series Smallville a lot around here, and there's one Smallville rewatch podcast that's always at the top of my queue. Always Hold On to Smallville, hosted by our pal, Zach Moore. Zach and his guests bring tremendous insight, passion, and humor as they discuss each and every episode of the series that ushered in the renaissance of superhero TV. Listen to Always Hold On to Smallville wherever you get podcasts, and keep an eye out for the other shows under the Always Hold On to banner, including Arrow, DC's Legends of Tomorrow, Superman and Lois, and Star Wars. Like we said at the top, I mean, it leads to, I think, a truly humorous scene back at the Tip Top Club where the assistant, Laura, right, I believe her name is, comes up and starts speaking to him in Spanish, and, you know, all he can muster is see. And Lois, thankfully, is quick to say, oh, you must speak in English. She's trying to practice his English, so she gets him out of it. But just that panicked look on his face, it was so funny, right?
And Jimmy's American accent on his Spanish is so bad. So that, I mean, if she was seriously trying to work out who he was, it wouldn't fly. But because he's an easy mark and someone she's trying to aim for to, you know, swindle, she kind of overlooks who he is. I mean, even his dancing, she invites him to the dance floor to do the tango. And Jimmy is all left feet, and she's leading him around the dance floor, and he's got no idea, and he's just, you know, obviously not a dancer of any note. And but again, it's just overlooked because she's just trying to schmooze him to eventually get his key.
Yeah, it's like, this is the sweet spot for my sense of humor, that kind of trying to maintain a ruse and the kind of misunderstanding. Like, it's so fun. I wish they had done more. I wish that scene had kind of gone on longer. I feel like they could have gotten even more mileage out of it. I do have to say, as much as I enjoyed Jimmy and all of this, I did miss his Spanish from, I think it was the Treasure of the Incas episode, one of the season one episodes where he keeps saying, Mr. Senor. Remember that one? Yeah. So I was just waiting for that, but in any event, they're there at the club, and our duo here, they go through the routine that we had seen before of the assistant taking the key and holding it up and the Swami guessing it and her making the mold of it and all of that. And so once that happens, Lois and Jimmy quickly book it for the hotel to try to get there in time to catch the burglar. And the Swami and assistant realize that they've left and decide to follow to help Monk, you know, carry this out and get the jump on Lois and Jimmy, right?
Yeah, because they're worried that obviously they don't know at this stage that Lois and Jimmy are anything but who they said they were. But because they've left the club so early, it doesn't give Monk the time to be able to make the key, get in, do his thing, and get out before they return to their hotel room. So at this stage, there's still no. Haven't clued on to who Lois and Jimmy really are. It's more the fact that we need to get there so that he doesn't get caught red-handed stealing from the hotel room.
Yeah, because she was just planning to keep them busy for a while longer out on the dance floor. And of course, that proves impossible when they're gone. Now, before we get to our big climax of the hotel, we do have this scene at the Daily Planet in the office where Clark needs to figure out what's going on here so he can arrive in time to save the day. And that's where we get this appearance from another Daily Planet staffer, which is just so notable because so many episodes, it's just our core crew. And you rarely get to see anything even close to a quote unquote newsroom. So and it's mostly just the exposition here of Doug, I believe his name is, showing Clark the paper, which had the notice about Don Alvarez. And that's how Clark starts to put the pieces together. And then there's a call that he takes for Lois as well. And again, he's getting the details that he needs. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. What did you think about just seeing someone else who works at the Daily Planet?
I was kind of hoping when I saw him, I was like, oh, who's this guy? And as you said, his name's Doug. Would have been nice if they had referenced Beanie, because in the radio series of the 1940s, Beanie was another Daily Planet staff member who was quite prominent in some of the episodes as another member of the, like another copy boy type of thing, who I believe was voiced by the narrator, Jackson Beck, putting on a squeaky kind of voice for Beanie. And, but yeah, we got Doug instead. And as you say, it's just a bit of exposition because there's nobody else around to give him the information that Clark needs to be able to put two and two together.
Yeah. It was just so interesting. And thank you for sharing that insight about the radio show. As, you know, as we talked about when we did that other episode, the radio show still remains one of those gaps in my fandom, with some exceptions. I've heard some episodes, but barely scratching the surface of that. But hopefully we'll get there in time. But we have another
podcast.
Yeah, right. I'll be there forever. But at the hotel, a very humorous exchange between Lois and Jimmy, where Lois pulls out a gun from her purse and gives it to Jimmy to use on Monk, to threaten Monk with when Monk inevitably breaks into the hotel room. And it's such a funny moment where Jimmy's pointing the gun in Lois's direction. She's like, "Would you stop pointing it at me? You're making me nervous." And he goes, "I'm making you nervous." Like, he's so freaking out there. It's so funny.
Jack Larson has such great comedic timing, and he's just, you can tell that comedy was something he loved doing. And he just plays that so well. He's like so nervous, but still doesn't want to back down and wants to, do what is required. So, and they do get the jump on Monk as he comes through the door, and they've got the gun on him, but that doesn't last very long at all.
Right. The other two show up and turn the tables and are prepared to throw them out the window and make it appear that they've committed suicide. Thankfully, of course, Clark is pulling up just at the right time and once again uses the X-ray vision. We get two X-ray visions in this episode. Mm-hmm. I don't have any sort of superpowers counter on this podcast, but if I did, we would check off two for using two uses of X-ray vision. Sees what's going on. We get some stock footage from season one of him running down the alley and then emerging as Superman and showing up on the balcony to save the day. And in a very clear distinction between season one and season two, there are no punches thrown by Superman. He deflects some bullets, and then we get the knocking of the heads of the goons' heads together. And I know this is the territory we're in now. I make my peace with it, but man, do I miss the days when you just clock them.
And even the assistant, the woman, she just passes out. She faints because the bullets bounce off Superman's chest. It's just like, well, that was easy.
Yeah. And then the little aftermath of this, Jimmy's still holding the gun, and Lois claims that it was unloaded, right, the entire time, which I think there's a mixture of initially relief, but then, hey, you gave me an unloaded gun to try to protect myself with. And he tosses it and it lands on the couch and goes off. And it turns out that it actually was loaded after all. What was your read on Lois's reaction at that point?
Yeah, I think it was just meant as a comedic moment, that last kind of line, that's just a kind of throwaway line, just to have that bit of levity at the end. And yeah, I mean, it wasn't the most comedic of lines, or at least I thought it was, at least I was told it was, or whatever she said along those lines. It's a little bit frivolous, a little bit irresponsible, but I think it's just trying to be passed off as a bit of levity at the end to, like one of Clark's throwaway lines at the end of his usual episodes.
Filmmakers and movie fans alike should be sure to attend these film festivals. Brightside Tavern in Jersey City, Hang On To Your Shorts in Asbury Park, Point Lookout on Long Island, and Round Reel in Bloomfield, New Jersey. Take it from an alum of two of them. Submission information for filmmakers, as well as details about the festivals, can be found at filmfreeway.com. Follow the festivals on social media for news about events, discounts, tickets, and more. Also, listen to the Hang On To Your Shorts and Cullen On Film podcasts, available via a shared universe network. This episode made possible in part by educator, hobby comic book collector, and pop culture enthusiast Sam Lim. Sam is based in the South Jersey area and is looking to connect with other comics fans as well as retailers. They're also looking for comic shops to explore, so recommendations are welcome. Be sure to follow Sam on Instagram at SZLComics to see their latest comic pickups and shop adventures. Indeed. And we're out, and that's our episode. So, like I said off mic, we always rate the episodes on a scale of 1 to 5 fedoras, of course, 5 being the best. So on a scale of 1 to 5, how many would you give this episode?
I would probably give this one a 3, in that it's above average, but it's not necessarily one of the great memorable episodes that will be on anybody's top 10 list of, you know, season two episodes even. It's very light on Superman moments, which is obviously where he, of course, it's the Adventures of Superman TV series. And so people expect to see Superman as the star of the show. But it's above average, as I say, because Lois and Jimmy's dynamic, the amount of time they get, Jimmy's comedy, it's still lovable and still enjoyable. And the little kind of story behind how the criminals were doing what they were doing is pretty ingenious. There's a great little scheme there, not something that the police would necessarily be able to figure out at face value. And so I was, you know, it kind of made Inspector Henderson, even though we don't see him again for the entire episode, we don't know how he reacts to the whole thing being played out. It makes him look good because, yeah, they don't have a clue. They have no idea. There is no evidence whatsoever for them to be able to follow this crime spree on. So in that regard, I understand why the police were so gobsmacked as to what was going on. So it was great Jimmy and Lois episode, but not necessarily a great Superman episode.
That's fair. And yeah, if not for Lois and Jimmy, Henderson would still just be twisting in the wind trying to figure all of this out. I do feel like that was a missed opportunity. It would have been cool to see Henderson again at the end, having any kind of reaction to this being resolved, right? Because we start with him, and it would have been nice just to kind of get a little full circle moment there. But I would also give this 3 for all of the same reasons. I think I won't rehash it, but great Jimmy episode. For me, there was enough Superman. There was about as much Superman as we typically get, but it was just, yeah, not enough Clark, right? Like Clark really didn't do anything in this episode. He's there for pieces of it, but really doesn't accomplish anything. So for Jimmy, it's a great episode. Otherwise, yeah, I would say about average. So I would go with 3 as well. This was a lot of fun. What would you like to tell folks, or where would you like to direct folks with respect to Superman homepage?
Well, obviously, supermanhomepage.com is the website. We're celebrating our 30th year online. So always powering on, covering everything that's going on in the world of Superman. Obviously, the big ticket at the moment is looking forward to the 2025 Superman movie, previously known as Superman Legacy. We obviously looking forward to season 4 of Superman and Lois and season 2 of My Adventures with Superman. So stay tuned to the website for all those news updates on everything going on around those properties and all the comic book reviews that we do regularly. But we also do our own YouTube show. We're live on Monday nights at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time for Superman Homepage Live. And I do a weekly news update with the Speeding Bulletin that also comes out on Wednesday morning. So those are the places that you should keep abreast of what's going on at the Superman homepage.
Awesome. Well, I hope everyone will check that out. And Steve, thank you very much for taking the time to join me for this episode.
Thanks, Anthony. It was awesome to be able to go revisit a Adventures of Superman episode. I hadn't seen some in a while. And when you invited me to do an episode with you for the podcast and we picked this episode to look back on, it was great just to watch an episode again. I haven't seen one of them for a while. So it was cool to go do that and enjoyed chatting with you about this episode.
Likewise. Well, thank you again. Thank you, audience. As always, I always appreciate you tuning in. Make sure you come back next week for another all new episode. And until then, remember, only Superman can do super things. This podcast is an affiliate of BCW Supplies. The next time you need to restock on comic book bags, boards, boxes, and more, be sure to use promo code FSP to save 10% on your order. That's FSP for Flat Squirrel Productions. It helps support the show too. Many of you have already used this code, and I greatly appreciate it. Thank you. Be sure to check out our sister podcast series, Digging for Kryptonite, A Superman Fan Journey, a weekly exploration of Superman's vast 85-year mythology, available wherever you get podcasts. Please join us on social media, become a patron, and subscribe, rate, and review today. Links are in the show notes. Thank you all.